So the departure point is that you want to implement that which is already adopted as policy. So how do you then unpick it? Mainly. So it's not about creating an alternative, kind of policy. It's what is there, how do we unpack? We cannot go against what is already adopted. So a lot is actually already adopted. We just unpack it a bit more. What does it mean to transform? What does it mean to improve access and many other things? Safety, how do you improve safety, security? How do you make sure that you reduce inequalities and all those things? So those are already in policy. Now, if there is a departure point that says the current policy is not agreed to, then the discussion is different. Then we have to talk about that. I think Rana did address that to quite some extent. Now, on the issue of nationalization of the industry, it's an issue of interpretation. The government is already paying, in the case of this current subsidies regime and so forth, government is already paying for the vehicles because the operators claim that. They claim that from the state. But the issue is there's a lot of operators who cannot get access to the market because they cannot raise the capital. So if that is a barrier, right? If that is a barrier, then the issue of competition become a bit moot. So you cannot talk about competition when you're creating a lot of these trade barriers. So the nationalization is not so much an issue. Financing is already being done by the state anyway. So it's about making sure that when you talk about an operator, you are an operator. You're not in the business of building things, infrastructure. You're not in the business of building exclusive lanes. You're not in the business of building things, unless of course you get into a partnership of sorts. That's another issue. But you're an operator, so when you ask for operators to tender, you want to make sure that they're able to tender on the basis of a service, as opposed to on the basis of whether they have a relationship with infrastructure, banks, and so forth, to an extent that it can become a barrier. So the issue of nationalization, I think, is really not there. In the rail sector, we've actually accepted that. If the Gautrain works on that model, the operator is there coming as an operator. The next operator, should there be a next operator, they use the same infrastructure that is there. The examples like those. So the issue of focus on impoverished citizens and so forth, again, is one of the elements. I don't think it's the only, is one of the elements that is there. So look, we need to look at it, the proposals in a holistic sense. There's no way that it says that you exclude others from the benefits, but the focus is pro-poor. Is a pro-poor focus, and that comes from government policy, so that you're able to unlock or reduce poverty as a trap. If we're saying the issues in the country, the biggest issues, one of them is poverty, that you have to do prioritize interventions to reduce, and is not to the exclusion at all of other, you know, markets from using public transport at all, as we see in the write-up. There was the issue of splitting of assets and so forth. I think we've addressed that. The benchmarks, labor, the point being made is around 35, currently around 35 to 45. Now let's zoom into that. Who are those operators who have got, whose labor cost is between 35 and 45%? Who are those? There are those, of course, I mean, we've done some surveys. There are some as much as, you know, 70% they are there. But there are those who are actually below, you know, 25%. But then again, it's a moot point because the issue here is what makes up the operating costs? What makes up the operating costs ultimately? How big is the network? The smaller the size of the network, the higher the overhead cost. So it's really about the, you know, many of the variables that make up that. But from a policy perspective, there needs to be a guide to say that we are moving towards that. If you look at in the rail, in fact, PRASA is saying that they want to move to about just less than 40% labor costs, and then there's a model around it on how that, you know, needs to happen, and it's doable. It's doable. You just have to, you know, be focused, you know, on delivery, and you know, reduce other things that are not focused on delivery of a service. It's doable. The thing is, it's doable. And in fact, half of the operators, in fact, in Gauteng, half of the operators currently are below 25, either 25 or below. Some, because it's clustered, some go as high as, like you said, you know, 40%, 35, 45. But again, it's about what makes up, you know, that that bill. And then the issue of kilometers, the 40 kilometers and so forth. Again, that is policy. Do we go against policy that is approved? No, we cannot. It's about how do you implement that. The things like the speed, the network speed, it comes exactly from that 40 kilometers. If you're saying that you shouldn't be subsidizing beyond 40 kilometers, not moving more than an hour, so immediately that says, you know, inherently, what you're saying is that you want to have a network that doesn't operate less than about 40 kilometers per hour. So it's about the choice of technologies that comes from it. Things like your emissions, again, it's not per kilometer of vehicle. If you look at that unit, it's per passenger kilometer. So that is actually, you know, still high. If you really want to get much better values, is per passenger kilometer, not per vehicle kilometer. If you're assuming that you know, you've got unitary drivers, you know, the number goes very high, goes way above 100 CO2 equivalent. But the more you increase the number of persons, you know, per vehicle, then it reduces accordingly. So it's the point there is that when you plan, from a planning perspective, the system itself needs to be such that you move towards that figure of 50 per passenger kilometer, not per vehicle kilometer. All right, so it's not about a vehicle, it's about the network itself. So the issues of safety, zero crashes, fatalities, and so forth. That is about moving towards. You need to prove that you're moving towards. Because one of the biggest costs that we have in the country is that of crashes. The economy is paying, you know, quite a bit on that. And we you know, so if you're moving towards that, it means that you're doing something that reduces your liabilities around crashes. And part of the funding program is take away those losses and bring them back where you can be productive as an economy. If you're spending, you know, the forecast for the road accident fund is saying by, I think it's 2023, you are going to have a deficit of about 500 billion for the road accident fund. So it's like an open, open-ended expenditure. Here we're saying that let's put together a planning authority, put together an effective strategy to move towards a situation where you have, zero. Practically, it's difficult to achieve that, as we know, statistically. Let me say statistically, not practically. Statistically, but you move towards that and you put things together, and there are things that can be done because, they've been done, elsewhere. Otherwise, we must just stop and say, we're not going to do anything around road safety. The system will run itself. But the idea is to move towards, to prove that from a planning strategy, we are moving towards that. And then part of the savings there is part of financing the system going forward. The issues of funding, how much will this cost? We put a figure there, the team put a figure of saying fund transport service delivery to the tune of 5%, equivalent of 5% of GDP. Currently, the estimate there is around just less than 0.8. This is overall across all spheres of government, equivalent of 0.8% of GDP. And there's a reason, reasoning behind it, that society currently pays equivalent of about 12 to 13% society as a whole on transport. And then equivalent, it's about seven. So the backlog is around 5%. So put on the table the equivalent amount. So the National Development Plan says for networking industries, we should be committing about 10%. That's in the National Development Plan. So we're saying transport should, have the slice in that should be, 5%. Now, as an industry, I would welcome such to say that you are, increasing. The issue shouldn't be about, fighting for little that is there. It's about increasing the resources available to be able to fund, a service that is critical. So it's a position that, is resonant in that way. Now, the final figure may be different depending on, what cabinet, agrees to. But there is a reasoning behind so that if you've got a backlog of this nature, to be able to address it, you'd be able to, you need to fund it, appropriately. And part of the funding is, as you fund the automotive industry plan, as you fund the human settlements, as you fund the, all of these things, even roads, how you fund roads, road network needs to be about services, delivering a service. So it's about how you configure that, but the argument is the point being made is finance these outcomes to the tune of 5% of GDP. So how that is going to be achieved, it is about the executive it's finding a way. But for an industry to say that 5% of GDP is unaffordable, I find it very awkward or even weird that you're saying that the executive, cannot, if the executive says I want to move towards that position and you say that it's not going to be affordable, then I don't know what you're really saying. You're saying you are okay with the current underfunding of service delivery. Then the
So Mateta, can I give you like 2 more minutes before I move it over to Darko?
Yes, okay. Then the issue of user-based, maybe that's the last point, user-based, that's an IT solution. That's really an IT solution more than anything else. If you want to do it, you know, how you've always wanted to do it, yes, it will be difficult. But if we're adopting you know, papers like a presidential commission report on fourth industrial revolution, and we're making those proposals that we're making in there, and we're saying we cannot identify, we cannot have an ID of a person with their attributes, then, you know, that talk is really moot. So the issues of targeted subsidy, that's an IT solution. It's about ID and then the attributes of an ID. It's about resourcing an IT solution more than anything else. Let me stop there.
Thanks, Mateta. I know that these are difficult issues that require a lot deeper conversation and always difficult to do in limited time. Darko, I'm going to allow you to add, but specifically maybe if you just want to come in with Prof. Walters' contention that there's been no reasoning in some of the proposals that, you know, we're not showing the benchmarks in relation to other countries and what's worked. And that essentially nothing inspires confidence in the state's ability to actually do some of what's being proposed because historically they haven't been able to do. So, you know, some of what maybe Mateta didn't get to in detail, but also I know you wanted to come in with some other issues.
Thank you, Diana. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
No, thanks. I think Mateta has quite a bit addressed the issue of benchmarks. I just want to raise two possible further comments. Prof has mentioned specifically the issue of contracting, and we never said that contracting will be out of the picture. In fact, commercial contracts will most likely, first of all, commercial contracts are just a mechanism of implementing a policy. And the ITPs or the transport plans are those that should guide what kind and what size of contracts will be there. So contracting is not out of the picture. It's more what is how the contracts are designed. And that leads to the second fundamental matter that we are putting on the table is that we are treating bus operators, minibus taxi operators as public transport operators, not as a mode specific operators. So if a transport plan comes up with a commercial design or a commercial contract that will include a mix of modes and unlikely minibus taxis in a current shape and form, we are proposing that the operators approach those commercial service opportunities in that fashion. So if you have to have a fleet of 50 buses and 10 9 meters or minibus taxis or whatever, regardless of you don't have to be a current minibus taxi operator or current bus operators to approach that. You are public transport service operator. So we are trying to divorce you from a specific mode. And many comments of Saboa relate to some kind of a bias and towards minibus taxi industry. In fact, we are acknowledging that in a long term, a minibus taxi industry in the current shape and form cannot remain stick to the minibus taxi vehicle as the mode. We want them to be transformed into public transport operators, and they also have to adopt other vehicle modes and to approach it in that way. So that is the two fundamental matters that I think we need to understand. It's not about the current modal structure of the industry. It's about being a public transport service operator. Thanks for now.
Thanks, Darko. Zain, can I just see if you want to come in at all? I mean, I know that a lot of the stuff around the current policy and what guides us? You've already amplified, but we've already amplified in the presentation, but is there anything you want to add based on issues Prof. Walters has raised on behalf of Sabowa?
Thank you, Rihanna. Can you hear me?
Yep.
So I think just a few material points. The one is that Prof. Walters refers to the 1996 white paper. Prof. Walters, you would have noted from the slide presentation that the 2017 white paper was adopted on the 24th of February 2021. So the guide to the policy that Dr. Mokanyama or Dako has referred to is the adopted policy is the 2017 white paper that was adopted. And in my responses, they emanate from the 2017 adopted white paper. So as a start, in the white paper, it deals with the objectives on public transport. And the one objective there, strategic objectives is to promote and implement a system of competition for the market related to public transport routes or networks based on operating licenses, concessions, and negotiated and tendered contracts with all public transport operators registered as formalized commercial entities bound by the regulations pertaining to their operating license. It's a very big statement, and because it's policy, it's something that the subsidy policy would have to take into account as part of the as part of the implementation. The issue of public transport funding is also dealt with in the 2017 paper, where there's an acknowledgement by in the policy which says that public transport remains inadequately funded. And specific funding issues still being a priority include the absence of dedicated funding sources, inadequate funds to ensure the implementation of long-term plans, the funding of public transport operations through multiple sources and channels. More importantly is the issue on planning and regulation. And the policy recognizes that the NLTA and its minimum requirements for transport plans, although they provide a sound statutory base for transport planning, there's still issues that need to be addressed. And these are the lack of capacity in provinces and municipalities to prepare adequate transport plans, and that this will be addressed through training and mentoring, the slow, inadequate implementation on transport plans, and that this is due to various factors, including the shortage of funds and the lack of capacity, and that transport plans are often idealistic and impractical, and these transport plans should rather focus on solving immediate transport problems. The last point in answer is on the overarching transportation issues. And as the policy document says, this is here lies the critical path or the critical way forward in transport planning. And the white paper says it's guided by the Republic of South Africa Constitution and national development principles, which envisage the devolution of power to the lowest competent level of government. Competency relates to whether the relevant level of government has sufficient capacity to administer the matters to be devolved. Devolved transport powers and functions may either be exercised exclusively or concurrently with a higher level of government. And then the policy sets out how does the department take this forward. As an example, it says the principle of subsidiarity and devolution of transport.
I'm going to give you 1 more minute.
Okay. Powers and duties, including the contracting authority and regulating agency functions to the lowest appropriate level of government where capacity exists, is confirmed. And the devolution could involve the creation of a transport authority or an equivalent coordinated and accountable structure at a municipal, provincial, or megacity or city regional level. So devolution of power forms the basis for what the policy provides for integrated transport plans, and this is a requirement under the Constitution of section, I think it's 151 to 163, provides there for the devolution at a municipal level, so that services can be brought to the citizens at the lowest competent level. Thank you, Rihanna. I think my minute's
up. Thanks, Zain. Basil, from the list that I had of issues that had been raised, I think almost all have been responded to, except for Prof. Walters did raise an issue around, you know, that the draft discussion document doesn't give enough of a sense of what other international systems were looked at and compared against, and the relevance of other models for the South African context. But, you know, we either have the option to allow someone on the team to respond to that or to open up in case there are new issues that Sibowa wants to engage with based on the responses that have been given.
Rihanna, yeah, I think thanks. That's been pretty comprehensive in terms of to and fro. I think at this point, it's important that maybe I allow it to let the forum have their speak, and it may talk to some issues and alternative opinions and shape the way we take the discourse forward. So at this point, I think, Prof, I'll allow you for a riposte, if that's the right word, or positioning, and then I'll guide the rest of the team post as you're speaking. Prof, do you want to come in?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that, for those responses. I guess what we are hearing is that the document is very silent on many of the arguments that you've put forward. You know, it's not the scaffolding to get to your proposals is just not in the document, the reasoning. And what you've given us this afternoon is more of the reasoning behind some of your thinking, which I think is missing in the document and should be elaborated. I mean, I think we are experts in public transport in the bus industry and the work being done around that. But there are many people in South Africa, most people in South Africa, don't know what this is about. And this is what's missing in the document. The arguments, the build-up, the reasoning, why you go in certain directions when you make radical proposals. I would like to just point on two things. This issue of nationalization. All that you're doing here in nationalization, if I follow Matita's argument now, is that you want to lower the cost of operating a service because the state will own the assets like the depots and the vehicles, and therefore you'll see a lower cost for managing the service on a competitive basis by the private sector. But all you're doing is you're hiding part of the costs, because some of the costs will be sitting in the state through the depots and the management of the depots, cleaning of the depots, acquisition of vehicles and things like that. And the other part of this contract will be sitting, or the service delivery cost will be sitting with the contracting party that's operating the services on behalf of, say, the state. So you're just hiding some of the costs. And a very good example is what's going on in Durban. You know, where the city owns the buses, it has to, ensure that the bus fleet's up to date and replacements take place and so on. And that case has been going on for years, the issues around that, and Zain will know about that. So I'll just mention that. So one has to, and the argument that's put forward, that the state actually owns, in inverted commas, these assets because it's funding these assets through the subsidy, I don't understand the reasoning around that. Then you must also say that if Murray and Roberts builds a road, and you pay for the building of the road, you own part of the construction equipment and the buildings of Barney Roberts, because you're contracting to build the road, but they must use their assets to do the work. It's the same argument. It's not different. When Mateta says it's different, it's not the same thing. It's the same argument in that they must use their assets and their infrastructure and the offices and the software systems and the graders, whatever they use to build the roads. Now you're saying, because you're paying them, you own part of that. And now a part of that business must be nationalized because you're paying for those services. It's flawed thinking. As far, and we've had this thinking before. It's interesting. It's already again surfacing in this proposed document. We've had this argument, and Lucibo will know this, many years ago. We had the very same argument, where it was also said, because we are paying for the buses, we want a higher return, you know, on lower cost or benefits because we are paying for the buses. It's a flawed argument. The other issue is that obviously a user-based subsidy is an IT solution. It has to be an IT solution. But this is not the big question. The big question is, what are the consequences of introducing something like that on the existing modes of transport, on competition between operators, on safety issues, the cost to the state? We don't see figures like that. Mateta's mentioned 5% of GDP. It's an enormous figure, and we would love to have 5% of GDP set aside for public transport. We are the last party to say that we don't want that, because we know that public transport has not been funded adequately in this country. But you must also be responsible in how you fund those, because public transport services in the future, whether it's through contracting or in your proposal, user-side subsidies, are we sure this is the way to go? Is this the way to go when you want to change the format of the industry from a non-sustainable, if you look at the tax industry, the sustainable on bigger modes of transport, bigger assets like buses that you're operating. So this is the issue that we have with the document. There's no discussion around this option that you've put forward, obviously the contracting. And we note the fact that you've said that there will be contracting in the doc, but we differ from how you see this contracting. But the big problem that we have is that the consequences of many of these proposals are not seen. We haven't seen arguments around that IT solution for user-based subsidies and the potential consequences on existing modes of transport. The consequences, for instance, if you go to nationalization, we take the assets away from operators. What happens to those assets? There's nothing around that. There's no proposals around that. It's just like a ball that's kicked into the air, and someone has to catch this. Hopefully, someone catches this. So much more discussion, a robust discussion on some of these proposals that you are putting forward that we don't think is thought through. And the thinking around things is nationalization, we think as an industry, it's flawed. It's not the correct way of approaching this, because then you must do the same thing for every other company that supplies services to the state, where in this instance, the industry supplies commuter transport services to the state based on the contracts that they've signed with the state and the deliverables that the state wants from these operators. So, Rihanna, I'll keep to those two comments at this point in time.
Thanks, Prof. I think then just going around, and the rest can do me a show of hands, but I think let's just take it from the top. Mr. Mayor, do you have comments or feedback or any particular questions you want to raise?
Yeah, Basil, I can keep you busy all afternoon.
Please do, yes.
My first comment almost is, have you applied your mind to the consequences of this policy? Do you understand that this policy will kill all current BRT operations that you have implemented over the last 10 years? There is no way that the city of Cape Town, my city, will be able to prove that they get close to any of those benchmarks. In paragraph 8.3.5, page 41, it says subsidy will only be allocated in terms of transport plans which proves that they can achieve the said benchmarks. So what happens to my city if they can't do this? Do they lose their subsidy? And just also in terms of Jackie's comment, my city contracts are very close to what is proposed here, where the infrastructure and the buses is all owned by the city. There's no discount that's passed on to the passenger. The passenger is actually paying more on a My City bus for the equivalent journey compared to a Golden Arrow bus. And it is about three times more expensive, the total cost of that system, compared to a legacy contract like that of Golden Arrow. Let me carry on. On paragraph 9.7, clause 9.7, page 55, it says the current trend is to formalize existing informal transport through subsidization. Can you confirm that for any taxi to become part of the subsidy system, they will have to be formalized. Can you confirm that to me? And then at what level will they be formalized? Will they be paying taxes? Will they have to abide by labor legislation? Will they be registered businesses? Will they operate as a normal commercial entity? I move on. I'll try and keep it short. My third question. So just again, sketch this taxi scenario to me. So the taxi would need an electronic machine. So that's fine. Let's say they buy them or government buys it for them. No problem. The passenger then gets a subsidy, a user side subsidy. They'll get issued some smart card. And now they can stand at a bus stop or a taxi stop and they get onto the bus, onto the taxi. They tap onto the taxi. The taxi receives the subsidy, the user side subsidy, which is just like a social grant. How does that subsidize a taxi? In what way does the taxi receive subsidy? Or is there an additional subsidy envisaged for the taxi? Maybe I should just stop there for now, Basil. Thanks.
Thanks, Francois. I'll take those aims and then I'll let you respond whilst I look for further ends down the line and go around the stands.
Basil, good afternoon, everybody. Basil, maybe we can ask Kriana or Darko, maybe just to explain to us in simple terms what the user side subsidy system that they're proposing will actually mean. For us as bus operators, what we understand if we hear a user side subsidy, it means that there will no longer be a subsidy paid. And let's look at it from a bus perspective for a moment. There will no longer be a subsidy paid to the operator. That will disappear. There will now be a system of, let me call it, to use Francois's word, a social grant that will be paid to members of the population that use public transport services. Is that what we are talking about? And maybe just some clarity, because we may be missing each other in terms of, if you say simply an IT solution, for us, it goes far beyond the IT solution. It goes to the heart of the way that businesses are being operated, you know, at least bus companies are being operated at the moment. So maybe just in simple terms, how will this actually work, what you are proposing?
Thanks, Dave.
Can I confirm that we're taking that round?
Okay. And you'll respond accordingly.
Okay, so I think it's useful, Taste, that that you're raising it in the way you are, because it might be, as Darko, as Mateta has also indicated, that on some issues, the way it's captured on paper is not translating the thinking and intent of the drafting team. So I'm going to allow Darko, Mateta, and then maybe Dr. Bloom, if he wants to come in on any of these issues. Darko?
Okay, thanks. Let me start, and other colleagues will assist in some of the matters. Maybe first to clarify something, the question that was made by Francois, I think, and Haynes, if we say user subsidy, in fact, the subsidy itself is for a user, not for the operator. So Francois, if you're asking question, how taxi guy will receive a subsidy, that's not an objective. Objective is that the commuter gets subsidized. Now, the implementation of the subsidy through operator contract or through the user base is a mechanism how to deal with it, not the policy. Policy says that the user should be subsidized because of their impoverishment status or because of a congestion or whatever is the case. So it is all about user subsidy, but there are different mechanisms how to reach the user. So when Mateta says it's IT solution, in a theory, we already have the SASA grants, am I right? And there are 17 million people who are ring-fenced who receive the state grants. So in theory, yes, there is a cost to issue the public transport cards, but if that can be achieved, in other words, all the recipients of the subsidy can receive the public transport cards with a credit of monthly credit of 100 rand or 200 rand. So in theory, it can work. And if all the public transport vehicles are AFC equipped, it's a matter of a user choosing whether it's a taxi or bus or whatever mode of transport and tap in as they move in. So in theory, it is simplistically saying it's possible, but we are not saying it's ready to be done immediately. Yes, there is a work to be done, and it's an IT type of work that has to be done. Okay, so that's one point. Okay, the other point is that I think Francois raised about formalization of the taxes. It will not happen immediately. It will not happen immediately, but it's impossible in the current state, shape, and form of the taxi industry to get subsidies through the taxi operators. It's impossible. How are they gonna change and how are they gonna corporatize? The BRT project is only one example how it could possibly work. And we are not saying it's a perfect example. There are many loopholes, there are lessons learned. But just think about it. In Joburg, we have two companies who are formed by the taxi operators. And to some degree, it's working. Okay. So it is possible. It is possible. It's a matter of taxi industry also understanding it's not about a minibus taxi vehicle. It's about public transport operations. The same message that we are saying to the bus operators, it's not about a bus only. It's about public transport operations. So if we collectively transform our thinking that it's about operations, public transport service, it's not about a bus, it's not about a taxi. Cape Town model, it has standard buses and it has 9-meter buses. And it's working. In principle, it's working. The issue of nationalization that has been spoken about, the difference, okay, phase 1A, a BRT company in Joburg has about 25% higher fee per kilometer than phase 1B, and PATCO would know that, okay? Why? Because the buses have been owned by the city of Joburg. So there is a kind of a saving, okay? But those buses are still paid by the government, so it doesn't say that the whole 25% is a saving. But what I think maybe Mateta can go further, the proposal of a capital subsidy or state owing the rolling stock, it's not only about hiding the cost, it's about achieving economies of the scale of, as you probably most of you know, the city of Joburg had to cancel second or third time the procurement of the buses for the phase 1C because they could not achieve the 30% local content according to the Department of Trade and Industry conditions. So there are some matters that needs to be taken into account. Okay, let me pause there and if other colleagues can add to it.
Thanks, Darko. Let's take Mateta.
All right, I'll be quick. The comment on, again, the nationalization. I think we're not necessarily comparing apples with apples. I mean, taking Marion Roberts' example, is more like one of the far-fetched extreme kind. You were talking about assets that are being used in a network for a city. So it's over a whatever period that asset is going to be used for production in a specific area. So it's not like, you're going to be nationalizing the chairs that, or the tables that an operator will be procuring or the things that they use. It is area-based, an asset. And there are pros and cons. I think there's a recognition that there are pros and cons. In this case, for the longer term, to achieve the objectives, some of them identified as part of this discussion, the pros are more than from that perspective, the cons. And then on the issue of consequences and so forth, I think the reading in that, I think Rihanna touched on it earlier, the reading on more pretty dark, the reading is probably of those, some of those benchmarks and so forth at an operator level, and it's not. It's at a contracting authority. So you are a contracting authority. You are a municipality, for example, a city or some municipality contracting authority. As you plan, you want to finance a certain outcome. So those targets there, most of them are actually at a system level. So you want to make sure that you achieve those outcomes. You are doing things to achieve outcomes at a network level. The how part, which Dako touched on the mechanisms, that is something that, you know, is part of, you know, work that needs to be done in terms of how do you operationalize these things. But the outcomes are at a network level. And there are many ways of getting there. Some, you know, longer term, some shorter term. I think also Dako touched on this issue of taxes. In fact, the DOT published, I think in March sometime, gazetted how they want to see the registration of the taxi operators, you know, want to look like. So there's already an intent to say that for you to be able to access this, in that case was the compensation on what is it?
COVID
related. Yes. So the already there's an intention to say for us to be able to do this, these are the conditions that you'd have to meet. So and the contention is at this stage is around acceptance of those conditions, but the intention is there. But again, going forward, this draft it's not about a mode. It's not about a taxi. It's not about. It's about a service provider who will contract it to provide a service. Now, in the case of an issue raised about how will an operator get? Again, like Dako said, the subsidy is the what is paid to the for the benefit of the user ultimately. The mechanism, which is the service provider who will be a contracted operator, will have a business model, and part of that is to have a profit that needs to be paid for by the contracting authority. So it doesn't take away the revenue from the operator. You pay for a service, but the ultimate is to finance an outcome, a network outcome. So the subsidy here, you're subsidizing, the achievement of network goals. The way you do it, you operationalize, is partly to the responsibility of a planning authority. Who needs to do so? If national government has to do that and say this is, how you do, how you don't, it then starts, taking over the executive authority of local government, who is a planning authority in this case, and also contracting authority.
Thanks. Thanks, Mateta. Jonathan, I know you've been very quiet, and I know that you feel like colleagues have covered most of what you wanted to say, but. Is there anything you want to come in relation, particularly to this notion of, did the drafting team kind of do enough international research, benchmarking in making the proposals that we're making?
I think, thanks, Rihanna. I think there's obviously lots of research that one could access, or whatever the case may be. In other words, there are certain benchmarks internationally, but I think one thing that we need to remember is I believe that we've got a very unique type of setup in South Africa, where you have very good formalized public transport services and systems in other developed countries, and even to a degree in developing countries, to a large degree in developing countries. And we are at that point now where we have to decide how to go forward. So getting to benchmarking and things like that, one can always put forward benchmarks, but those are benchmarks that one wants to strive to achieve. I think it's been clearly stated that it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take many, many years to achieve those benchmarks. If they are adopted as benchmarks, I mean, that is exactly the objective. Those are benchmarks objectives. So you want to try and achieve them or access them in a certain way. And that goes through formal planning. So that's my comment on that specific aspect. The other thing that I just want to mention is what Francois also mentioned in terms of the taxis, and Doukas covered it to a degree, and Mateta as well. And that is, I think government is quite clear that the minute they're going to go forward, because if you think bus companies are being subsidized, but they're formalized. So, and government has made it clear, from what I understand, is that any subsidy that's being provided to public transport, and if we talk about the taxi industry or any other public transport providers, there are certain requirements. There's a certain level of guidance that they provide, and there's a certain level of regulatory mechanisms that need to be adhered to. I mean, Francois mentioned paying of tax and things like that. I mean, that goes without saying, because that's what happens when you start to formalize a business. You're registered for everything that you need to do, and you operate as if you're a going concern and an entity that's there to provide a service, but then also to make a profit. So I think that level of formalization is important, but it's how it's conveyed and how it's introduced is the trick, because otherwise it'll be more of the same. And it's very important to understand that understanding that's instilled in if it's taxi operators, small bus operators, whatever type of operator, it is so essential that an understanding is achieved of the holistic approach to the different modes, the mix of modes, at what level it occurs, etc. So that, I think, is one of the key aspects in terms of what the discussion document is trying to convey, and I think what we as a team are trying to convey. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan. Basil, I'm noting that there are about 12 minutes left, so I'm going to hand it back to you.
Yeah, thanks. I'm not seeing any hands, but I'll just take a round robin. Mr. Matabula, anything you want to comment on your side?
No, for now, I'm content, Basil.
Thanks, Opa. George?
Covered, Basil, thank you.
Covered. I don't see any further hands. Francois, you back on screen. You need a follow-up or showing us?
Basil, if I may, Rihanna's, I think it was a third paragraph that she had on her slide. I know in my document it is, I think, paragraph 12.7. That is quite a dangerous paragraph, and I would very much like Rihanna just to take 2 minutes just to try and explain it almost word for word. What does it mean? What does rationalization mean? And all the, based on an interim rationalization of prevailing service designs, what does that mean? Can she unpack that paragraph for us a bit? I think there's a lot hidden in it. Thanks.
Okay, so the slides are actually team slides. Francois, I have the joy of having to manage stakeholder engagement and not have to deal with all these complicated things my colleagues do. So Darko or Mateta, I'm going to hand over to you. That is part of the document, in fact. It's drawn directly from the draft discussion document. But Darko or Mateta, I don't know which one of you wants to take this. And then Basil, I am noting Prof. Walter's hand as well.
Okay, sure.
I suggest Mateta, maybe you can share the current approach of Gauteng province in terms of what is intended to be done for the new bus contracts.
I think it's not a loaded statement. I think I don't know if you are reading it as loaded. Prepare a competitive procurement process. So essentially, there is a competitive procurement process for services. So these are in interim measures or things that you know would be done in the short term, right? Competitive process for prevailing bus you know contracts based on an interim. On an interim rationalization of the prevailing service designs. So essentially, recognizing that it is not the final network, it is a transitional measure. Essentially, we haven't been very good in the country with management of transitions. Transitions take long, becomes permanent. But the intent here is to say that. You know, if you're going to have a network approach to doing things, there are lots of other areas that are not being serviced. But for now, you want to rationalize or you want to essentially make sure that what you have can be defended, is affordable. Essentially, it achieves you know certain specific outcomes that may not have been there historically, as would be required by the contracting authority. Issue operating contracts aligned to the legislative requirements to enable stabilization of service provision and improvement of the service levels. So I suppose it's a long-winded, you know, statement, but essentially is about stabilization, but based on specific objectives. It's not a network-wide, you know, intervention. It's to say that in areas that you already have these services, let's make sure that we stabilize essentially. The key word there, I think, is stabilization. Stabilization, and stabilize in relation to what can be afforded. I think if Darko, taking the cue from Darko in Gauteng, went out firstly to get a sense of you know where to pitch things, it was clear that what they had. As unit costs was not what the industry uses as unit costs. So based on the knowledge of unit costs, you're then able to configure things in relation to what can be afforded. So instead of saying 10 kilometers, you then say, what can I afford based on whatever unit costs? Maybe I can only afford 5 kilometers out of that. And you state it accordingly, but it's an interim measure. Over time, the idea is to make sure that you're able to, as a contracting authority, to achieve you know, certain outcomes as listed in there. Thanks.
So Prof. Walters, I'm noting your hand. I'm also noting that we have about 7 minutes left.
Yes, yes thank you very much, Rana. I think just 2 comments again. Darko mentioned on user side subsidies, this IT solution was mentioned by that there are 18 million people on social grants, right? If you look at giving them 200 rand a month, I think you spoke about 200 rand a month. I couldn't hear him properly. We're really talking about 3.6 billion or 36 billion per annum. Where the current funding for public transport all over the country is around, including Gautrain and Metro and so on, is also about 36 million. So this is already a doubling just for those 18 million people. Now, what we need to understand, this is a question Thijs asked you, which I don't think we've got the full answer, and Thijs can speak for himself, is what do you mean by this? There's no detail in your document. Maybe it's a policy document, it doesn't have to be in detail. But the problem is, if you make a proposal, and the devil is in the detail, and we don't see the detail, how can you make a rational decision around a policy direction if you don't know what it's going to cost, how many people are targeted, who are targeted, what it will cost? There must be some costing of these policy proposals, because the next thing we hear, oh, this policy has gone through, but we never thought about the entire policy, the systems, it was mentioned by the consultants. You must have a systems approach, you must look at the entire thing. We need to see what the implications are of your proposals financially, operationally. If you have 18 million people on the social grant system and you pay them 200 rand a month, how will you control which modes they are using in your public transport plan? You have no control over that. Your transport planning will go through the roof. You have no control over that thing because they will choose the cheapest mode. How will you make sure the bus is competitive to the rail and to the rail competitive to bus and bus to taxis to make those people, when they make a choice, make a rational choice? They go to the cheapest mode, and if it's informal, like Francois says, their cost will be much lower than any formal mode of transport. Then what? That's the first one. Second comment here, Matilda mentioned here, and we mentioned that in our comments to you. What is this area-based theory of nationalization? We don't know what you are talking about. There's something you have in your minds that we don't see in paper that we can rationally judge as to what are you meaning by this. Expand. So we want you to expand on these things so that we have a full insight of what you're thinking is and what the costs are. The worst thing we can do in this country, we've done it so many times, is propose a policy without understanding what these policies are going to cost us to implement and what the consequences of those policies will be, intended and unintended. And this is what we need for a proper policy proposal, is full insight as much as possible based on international experience. That's why we said we'd like to see your reasoning based on international practices or those that Africa is unique. And we fully agree with you, are you, as far as it's concerned, but we can learn. I mean, if you look at airline deregulation, we learn from the Americans what to expect in South Africa and materialize and what to watch out for if you look at airline deregulation. So there are many. So what we want is a more reasoned document, more information, not skimpy, you know, on user side subsidies, not on this area-based thing, not on nationalization. We want to see what you're proposing in full so we understand, and then we're on the same page, and maybe then the point of departure will be the same. Our view, in any case, on the white paper, both white papers are very much the same. There's no big difference between the two white papers.
Okay, Prof. Thanks. I'm going to allow for Darko.
Rihanna, coming there. Let Darko respond. But as I think the team's getting a sense a little bit more, and we don't want to be too cliched about it, devil in the detail type approach. After Darko has responded, I'll take a view from the industry. And I think ultimately what we need to close off with is the department giving us some guidance as to what now. We've had these engagements, and what now after Darko's done? And I think formally the department needs to guide us in this process so we know how to interact going forward. Thanks. Darko, over to you.
Maybe just to reiterate again, Prof, it's not about a mode. It's not about if someone receives a subsidy as a user, whether he will choose bus or taxi. It's not about a mode. If a proper ITP is developed on a network basis, as Mateta said a couple of times, it will not be about whether we have a taxi operators and bus operators. It will be a network-based solution and design of a possible contract that will say on these routes, on these corridors, we believe the best optimal mode, vehicle mode is a 36-seater or 16-seater or 100-seater, okay? So it's not about a mode. Secondly, we are not saying that all 17 million grant users will receive money, but whatever the calculation is and whatever the amount, as you mentioned, 36 billion or whatever, that's why Mateta has indicated, that's why it's a proposal that the public transport should receive 5% of the GDP nationally. So there is some rationale or logic why it has been proposed 5%. So if that money, if eventually some better funding is secured for public transport, obviously some of these objectives could possibly be met. Okay, but it's impossible for a sectorial policy like this one, which is a transport policy, to make sure that 5% of GDP is definite. It's someone above the sectorial policy who has to take all the other policies into and all other funding requirements into consideration and balance the things out at the end of the day. Yeah, let me pause there.
Rihanna? But are you really expecting Treasury to make 36 billion or 100 or 150 billion rand available without detailed proposals of the cost, the benefits, and intended and unintended consequences of this proposed policy?
So Prof. Walters, we've had a conversation. In fact, we've had two conversations with Treasury. And I think people back at Treasury need to start thinking about the various grants, and they've indicated that, the various grants that government currently has, and that the grants in some ways mitigate against each other. So if you look at the grants being used for human settlements vis-a-vis the transport grants, so, I mean, the policy is also proposing that there will have to be some trade-offs, but I don't think it's, you know, the role of the drafting team or DOT or the bus industry to make an argument about the fiscus. That will be something that DOT and Treasury will have to thrash out. That's certainly our sense, is that we should be advocating for at minimum 5% of GDP. And that everyone in public transport should really be getting behind that notion of, we are underfunding public transport. We can't expect to have great public transport with the levels of funding that are flowing towards it. And that message needs to be gotten to decision makers by everyone in the system. But Basil, I'm gonna hand back to you.
I think,
as a participant, not as a facilitator.
That kind of underpins the narrative from an underfunding point of view. But in the absence of hands and further comment, I'm looking to, as a close off, to discuss what happens from here onwards. Lesiba, will you guide us there from an owner or ownership point of view? Or I'm not sure if Dr. M takes the lead on that one. But just so as we now to align ourselves into the further processes going forward. Obviously, the industry will now reconvene and take views on all the submissions and responses, and we'll then communicate accordingly. But I just want to get a formal picture from you and the team as to how we go about the way forward.
Thanks, Basil and colleagues. Afternoon. I think in terms of the way forward, maybe before I comment on the way forward, just to reiterate that having listened to the discussions today, we would not want to close the option for Sabua to still make submissions to the team if there's a realization that there are gaps. Because I think ultimately the objective of this development process is to look at all the available options that are there for subsidization as from a policy perspective. There are different approaches and models that can be looked at, starting from the objective of subsidization. I think having listened to the discussion, I realized that sometimes we're focusing more on the mechanism of subsidization rather than the objectives of subsidization. Yes, the mechanism is important because it might change the landscape in terms of the way subsidies are being dispersed currently. But we should also look at the objectives generally, because like Prof saying, we had a chat yesterday, that from government perspective, when we go to parliament, everywhere we go, we are questioned of having looked at all available options and models of subsidization. One of the has been the user side subsidy, like Darko and Mateta has been saying, to say, should we adopt a one size fit all, or should we look at other options? But while we look at those options, we must also look at the pros and cons of each mechanism to say, will it work within the South African context? And I think it is up to the industry to submit. If we feel there are gaps in terms of looking holistically, for example, at the user-side subsidy, like Daisy was saying, can we have a clear understanding of what does that mean? What are the pros and cons from the industry side? We Dr. Mukoyama has indicated that this is a solution that is IT-based. But from the industry, I had Prof. Walters was saying, there are consequences that you might have to look at. I think those are the things that we need to capture so that ultimately when a decision is taken, you know, all sides of the issues have been carefully considered and again, to come to a conclusion that we as a country, we might not necessarily have a one-size-fits-all in terms of subsidizing public transport. But again, to reiterate that the discussions must be based on public transport operations. Yes, we can put our caps on as bus operators, but we're now looking at the future of subsidizing public transport in the country. So we would not want to close the discussion buses. I think once the industry through SABUA has convened at and a post-mortem of the discussions today, you are still allowed to submit further inputs where you think there are gaps that needs to be closed. Obviously, we are working on a very limited time frame. I think by we just have to thresh it out with the team, but at least by end of September, we should be coming to a conclusion in terms of stakeholder consultation, because the idea is to have the draft that the department will now consider and look at all the proposals before we can submit to cabinet. So I would say there's still an opportunity to submit where we think there are gaps, and the team will look at that before they do the second draft. I think the team is now in the process of incorporating inputs that comes from other stakeholders. So you can still make further inputs and raise the issues that you are raising today before the final draft, I mean, the second draft document is finalized for circulation. I think that for now would be how we propose, unless from the team they want to add in terms of their plan for the remaining of the period. The target date for submission to cabinet is December.
Thanks, Lesiba. It's just here. Is anybody from the team? I think you've encapsulated that. But I think Rihanna indicated that closed off. I think the industry's got the picture. We'll take review and we'll certainly take up that opportunity to present alternative and or other thinkings and pros and cons and submissions, all part of the consultative and engagement process. And we'll get that back to you in writing. And if necessary, then we'll liaise with yourself and the team if there's a clarity seeking session required to go through that. But we appreciate the opportunity to continue making that representation and submission. Colleagues, I think that's it's brought us to the end of this session, which clearly demonstrated there's not enough time. So I urge all of you to ensure that you continue to review the documents, review the submissions, critically pull out your comments and send to SABUA, to Jackie and myself for collation. And then we'll do a follow-up a detailed submission in writing to the department and the team, and then we'll take it from there. But I thank you all for your commitment and time and availability. I think this is a critical issue that warranted today's discussion. Hopefully it's aligned some thoughts and taken us apart on other thoughts, but that is the nature of engagement and consultation. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Basil.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks, comrade.